Today's reading comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Matthew 2, verses 1 through 12. And it reads, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, a wise man from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. When they told him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for it is written by the prophet, "And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means last among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel."' When Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared, and he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him.' After listening to the king, they went on their way. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way." This is the word of the Lord.
It's great to be thinking about Christmas. It's a passage that you know, and it is a passage that mostly you probably think about through the lens of culture. It's probably not even the passage you even think about. You think about it through kind of this image. We call it the nativity scene. And if you read the Bible, what is Christmas from the Bible, it's not what you think. And so I know if you have been listening to my preaching that you've heard me say this. But if you're new to Revive, in our church, we do everything by the Bible. There are things in the culture that say, this is Christmas, but it's wrong. It's actually not the way it's depicted in the Bible. And so let's get into today's passage, okay? So part one, the meaning of the gifts. The meaning of the gifts. Part two, the foolishness of the Magi. Did you know that the Magi, who are the wise men, as we call them, if they were to come into Silicon Valley today, most everybody who lives here would think they're dumb. And I want to talk a little bit about why. And part three, the foolishness of God. Christmas is utterly about the foolishness of God. Let's go. Part one, the meaning of the gifts. So let's go to that verse 11 right away. It says verse 11, "And going into the house," did they go into a stable? Did they see Mary sitting by a manger? They did not. So this is not on the day of the birth. Jesus is a month old, 2 months old, 6 months old. We don't actually know. They're still in Bethlehem. They're not from Bethlehem. And probably, it probably wasn't 6 months. You probably don't want to take a 6 month trip someplace because that's not where they're from. So maybe he's 2 weeks old. Everybody left, now can finally get into a proper place, and you don't have to smell the horse you-know-what, okay? And so we tend to think about Christmas as this beautiful, glorious day. It's beautiful to us. But when the wise men showed up, you know, at least they don't have a mother who's weeping because she just smells like you know what pee around the room, because the babies crib is like the worst one of all time. That was the actual Christmas, and that's in the Gospel of Luke. But this is a little bit later. And I always just kind of want to point this out. On the birthday of Jesus, the Savior of the world, the poorest were invited. Shepherds were told they were at the bottom rung of the society. They were directly invited by the angels. But a little while later, a couple weeks later, people who were wise, they had to find their way to Jesus. And it wasn't easy. It was hard. They had to show up at this king. Where's he going to be born? Okay, they don't even know. But they just somehow, and this part's kind of mysterious, they know this very, very important king is going to be born. And they came a very, very long way. And I'll say a little bit about that, but let me wait. I want to say what happens. They come in. It's to a house. They see the mother. They see this child. And I want you to think a little about this. It's so familiar. I always feel like I'm trying to do this. Christianity in America has become this thing that everybody thinks they know. It's this very familiar thing. If you grew up in the church, you think you know Christmas. You grew up with it. It's like it's got trees, it's got lights, right? It's got the stories. You know this thing, and you probably know it in a Sunday school way. You know it in a very sentimental way. But I just try to get into the way the Bible presents it. It's totally weird. These guys from a very far off foreign country, they're probably rich. It has been suspected that they are probably kings or princes, because who else could make such a crazy journey? And who else could have such gifts? So immediately they see this baby, they get on their faces, and they worship. It's totally weird. You ever go to somebody's house, see a baby, and go, yeah, let's worship? Let me tell you how many times it's ever happened to me. Zero. Because I don't worship babies. So these people aren't even Jewish. They don't know the God of Israel. And in some ways, I'm going to say a little bit more about that too. The Jews might have been the last people to think that they should do that. Okay? But this is what they do. They worship. And then they give these gifts. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. Okay, so first of all, you all, I know in your head you think, there's three of them. There's not three of them. It doesn't say anywhere in the Bible there's three of them. What they says is there are three gifts. So we tend to think there's, it must have been like one with gold and one with frankincense and one with myrrh. It kind of makes sense, but it's wrong. It might have been two of them. It might have been 20. But they bring these gifts. So I want to say a little something about the meaning of these gifts. So first and foremost, they're all extremely valuable. They're really expensive. And you probably, you know, don't know what two of them are, okay? Gold is easy. So here's the first thing. First, they're extremely valuable. They're very, very expensive. And they're gifts fit for a king. It's luxury. It's for royalty. And basically, only rich people have them. And it's for rich people. It's for someone really, really high and worthy. So that's the first point I want to make. Gold is obvious. It's extremely valuable. It's beautiful. And it's always been seen that way just by pretty much every culture that's ever been around, and which is why for ages and ages, and still kind of, it's like the basis of money, or at least it's connected to money. Okay, so that one's easy to take. What does gold represent? Money. It represents wealth, a lot of money, okay? What is frankincense and what is myrrh? Frankincense is a kind of incense, right? And both of them, I did a little search on this, and you don't have to be some great seminary-trained person. You could do this now in 30 seconds, because that's how long it took me, guys. It's called Google. So I use Google, and boom, the scholar, this kind of modern, you know, horticulture's it came like University of Illinois gave this little article, and I read it, okay? Both frankincense and myrrh come from a tree extract. And it's essentially, it's called resin. I don't know what resin is. But resin is essentially a tree extract. It's dried tree sap. And it's not just any kind of tree sap. It has to come from very specific kind of trees. Frankincense particularly comes from trees that you can't domesticate. Like, we can't grow them ourselves. It just kind of has to be wild. I don't know why exactly we can't domesticate this tree. So it's really just, it's so much a gift of God. And these trees are delicate, and they take a long time to grow. Apparently, on average, like 25 years. So you know what that means? It's really hard to get the extract that gets frankincense, okay? It's very, very valuable. So you just don't give it to anybody, and not just anybody can have it. It's very, very valuable this way. Now, back then, so what would they have used it for? So scholars think that they probably may have used it for medicinal purposes, but the most obvious purpose is, well, it's incense, and it smells really, really wonderful. And I just want to say this about something that smells wonderful. We live in a modern time, and even if you don't have much money, okay, you could go to Target. You can go to Target, and you can get, like, the fake version of the most expensive perfume, and you could smell like, you know, whoever the beautiful person is that, you know, is the person that is the face of Chanel No. 5, ladies, you could smell just like that. For way cheaper, you don't have to buy the expensive version, okay? But because we have that, we don't think smelling nice is that important. And we have soap, and we have shampoos, and all these kinds of things. In general, if you smell bad, you're offensive to people today, because that's what kind of a privileged society we lived in. But back then, it's not true. And in lots of places in the world, they cannot shower or bathe every day. They don't have all these nice smelling things. And you know who had, so imagine if you went to a really rich person's house and you walked into one of the rooms and all you smelled was body odor. Imagine if you walked to the back of the house and you're like, wow, the outhouse back outside is kind of smelling up the back of the house. That was completely normal to everybody, because this is how you live, except if you're rich, if you're a king. You knew that you walked to a king's palace because it smelled wonderful. So just the fragrance alone represents wonderful, beautiful. It represents elevation. It represents status. It represents, we don't live in the muck of the slums out there where we got to smell the outhouse. It represents something wonderful and exalted, okay? And the third one, myrrh, it also comes from this very delicate tree. And they tend to be used as medicines. They tend to be used for embalming. So if you're poor, you don't embalm your dad. You're going to put him in the ground and then it'll just be gone. But if you're rich, you get to preserve your dad. That's how it works. But it was expensive. Now, when I see these things, you know what I see? I see money in the gold. I see beauty in the smelling. I see comfort in the myrrh, because it's medicines. It's really uncomfortable and painful to be sick. And it feels very dishonorable if you can't do something good for the dead, right? And all of it, all three, represent elevation. It represents status. And here's the point I want to make before I go to part two. Aren't all these things that you and I want in life? The things fit for a king, that's what we want in life. I'm not a bum. I'm not a nobody. If someone shows up at my house, they don't have to smell the poo because we have nice sprays in our bathroom. Okay? So we have the cheap version of frankincense in our bathroom. And if someone gets sick, we have medicines. Gold and frankincense and myrrh. And all these are the things that we feel like, if we're going to have a good life, these are the promises of the world. We must have these things. Then we can live like a king. But here's the wisdom in Christmas. Here's the wisdom of the wise men. They have these things. They're extremely wealthy. And you know what they think is important? To give them to a higher king. To give them to one who is worthy of their worship. You see it? These things aren't that important. Life is far more than these things. Actually, worship is more important. Worshiping one who is worthy, higher, true worship, that's what's important. Let's go to part two. The foolishness of the Magi. Okay? Now, if you live in Silicon Valley and somebody gives a lot of money away for religion to Jesus, those people are dumb. I already know those people are dumb because that's like wasting money, right? Like wasting time. That's just plain dumb in Silicon Valley because isn't Christianity a hateful religion? Isn't it a superstitious religion? They don't even like science, do they? That's what people think, even though all of it is just false, right? But we already know that the Magi gave very worthy gifts. But did you know that it cost them just to give them a chance to give those gifts? We know that they had a priority of worship. So, I don't know. We know these things. You know where they come from? Frankincense and myrrh. So, the modern scholars say that these things come from either Ethiopia or Somalia. Okay, that's where they come from. Okay, so these guys didn't come from like 100 miles away. They didn't take a one-day journey. They came from a long, 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 long ways away. All right? So, again, I looked it up. So I just chose two, you know, well-known cities in those two countries, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. If you don't drive, this could be a longer journey. You know, you might have, okay, we got to take the donkeys this way, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it might be longer than this, okay? But if you drive, it's 2,400 miles. And from Somalia, it's even further. If you go from here to New York City, it's less than 3,000 miles. I've done it multiple times, right? It's a really long drive, okay? It's extremely long. It is a huge country that we live in. This would be longer. So how much did it cost in their money, in their time, in their planning to show up at a little house to sit before some really, really poor people, some people so poor that the kid was born in the worst and put into the worst crib of all time. And I don't know how long they spent. An hour or two. Maybe they brought dinner. That would have been nice. If there's 20 of them, it'd have to be an expensive dinner. So maybe they spent 4-5 hours in this house. And then I go, okay, let's go back 3,000 miles on our horses. That's what the trip costs. In order to have a few hours of worship. To the world, this is intensely stupid. But we call them the wise men. And we talk about them and think about them every Christmas. You want to know what real wisdom is? You will incur cost. You will give incredible priority. You will clear your schedule You will do what it takes to go before the Anointed One, the Messiah, the only one who could save your soul, the only one who could save your people, the only one who can bring us peace and justice and righteousness, as we talked about as we were lighting these candles. There's only one person who could do that. And to go before him, to give your gifts, even just for a short period of time, according to those who are truly wise, it's worth it. Whenever I think about this passage, wisdom. You know, I never was taught this when I was a kid. Okay, I got the American Christian Christmas like everybody else. In fact, I got the Korean Christian Christmas, which is, you know, it's just very super culturally oriented too. But then I became a pastor when I was older, and then I had to preach these, and then I was going, okay, what am I going to talk about this year about this? And I had to meditate on this, and I realized we're into chapter 2 of the New Testament. And chapter 2 of the New Testament is giving you wisdom. And it's telling you that worship is above all things in your life. Whatever treasures you think you have, if you are wise, you're willing to sacrifice them to have real worship. But the passage that I always think about, which really helped me to see this, is here. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And this is just such an incredible passage to me. It changed my life as I really thought about it. I never thought about this as a kid. But then in my mid-20s, I really chewed on it. It goes like this. I won't do the whole thing. And if you know me, you know I care a lot about this passage. And you will hear about this passage regularly at our church. But just for sake of time, briefly. For the word of the cross, that's the gospel, by the way. For the gospel is folly. In other words, it's dumb. The Greek word there is moronos. It's moronic. To those who are perishing. And we're surrounded in a city of people, they don't even know it. They're literally dying. They're literally suicidal. Even though they have nothing to worry about in terms of their clothes or their food or whatever, and they live in the best weather in the world, the richest place in like the history of mankind, and they're literally suicidal. The gospel is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Do you want power in your life? More than whatever the money, the gold, whatever your gold and frankincense and myrrh is, can offer? For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart. That is God's promise. If you ever hang out with me, you will know that every now and then you'll find out that I went to some famous schools. I went to this university whose name you all know. It's a place called Harvard. And if you ever hang out with me, it won't take you long before you find out that I despise Harvard. like I hate it, probably almost sinfully so. Because I found out that a lot of what comes out of Harvard is not actually wisdom. It's actually wickedness. And regularly, that just continues to go on. It was like that when I went and got my degree. So people go, oh, you went to Harvard. You're so smart. And they think that's just so great, such a great. And I always sit there going like, inside I'm cringing. Because I'm thinking, yeah, that was not really anything to be proud of. And I think about this passage. God promises, I'll destroy the wisdom of the wise. And we live in one of the most arrogant, wise cities of the world. And let me tell you, God will destroy the wisdom of the wise of our wicked city. And you know where it is really obvious that it will happen? At Christmas. Verse 20, where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where's the pundit? Where's their podcasts and essays? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? And it says, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. The Magi would be seen as idiots today. They expended great time and energy to go worship. Today, worship is like the last thing on the mind. It's just that people don't think they're worshiping, and then they go worship football. They don't think they're worshiping, and then they worship wealth. They don't think they're worshiping, and then they worship health. That's their version of frankincense and myrrh. And then they judge you. What? You don't eat organic. You're bad. Because their righteousness, they're better than other people because that's their wisdom. But what we need is a higher worship. And the real wisdom, which was in the Magi, they know. Now, I thought about moving on after saying this part, but I just can't quite move on. I'm going to kind of stick it to you here now. Are you as wise as the Magi? Or are you so worried about your gold and frankincense and myrrh? And if you're honest, a lot of you, most of you, all of you, were very much got to hold on to the gold and frankincense and myrrh. And I'll be a little mean right now. I was really happy when I came to church today. Why? Because the parents were here early. And why were you here early? Because your kids were giving a rehearsal for the performance next week. And you know what? That's great. I'm glad you came. And you should sacrifice for your kids. And you do. But let me say something to the parents. You will sacrifice to give your kids, quote unquote, everything. And all the things you want to give your kids are things like soccer, swim lessons, you know. Oh, we got to send them off to this camp, this coding thing, and they're going to get this and that. Right from their birth, they got to listen to the right music and eat all the right foods. And there's so many things that you got to give your kids. But maybe some of these gold, frankincense, and myrrh things you're trying to give your kids, maybe you should sacrifice them for worship. Maybe you should sacrifice them for worship. That's real wisdom. This week when I was thinking about this message, I got really grateful to my parents. I grew up in a devout Christian family. I sometimes had a hard relationship with my dad. But I'm super grateful for this. My dad and my mom, they always made sure we worshiped. We go on vacation, we worship. I'm like, we're on vacation, and we're going to go find a church. If the weather's really, really bad, there's a special service on a Wednesday night, and they come home late from work, we will eat McDonald's, and we go to church to worship. And my dad still wakes up at 5:30 in the morning to worship. And I'm really grateful for that because he didn't tell me worship was important. My dad showed me worship was important. He had the wisdom of the Magi. And so when I was in college, when all my friends would sleep in on Sunday morning, I slept in Monday through Friday. I'd have an 11 o'clock class, and I would miss it. Don't tell my dad. Okay? But I never missed church. 9 a.m. service. Oh, my goodness. 18 years old. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I can't believe I'm getting up at 8:30 on a Sunday. Because my dad taught me worship is above all things. And sometimes I sure as heck didn't feel like it. It was a tremendous gift. And this is a gift from the Magi to us. Revive, can you receive it? In our wicked, foolish city, whose wisdom God is destroying. Now, let me close. When talking about the foolishness of God, we already kind of waded into this water, and this verse is one of a life verse for me. It's partly because when I was young, I was essentially an intellectual snob. I can own it, right? Other people wanted a lot of money. I wanted money, but I didn't need to make millions of dollars. I just needed a BMW, okay? It's like, not even the 7 Series, the 3 Series, that's good enough, okay? I was like, I was modest. I'm a good Christian. I can go with the 3 Series, okay? Right? But you know what I really thought would give me worth? Being smart. I was at the top of my class. Most of the years in school, I'm like, this is how I'm cool. And I'm going to make it to the top of the heap. And then I got to my 20s, and I found out it was seriously wicked. And boy, was that an incredible piece of humble pie. And in our wicked city, I want you to hear this verse. So let's go down. All right, they fell down and worshiped him. And here's the verse 25. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. You know why most people in our city, and you all know this, I mean, some of you, you won't even come out of the closet as a Christian at work. I know some of you admitted this to me, like, I'm not going to pray for lunch when I'm at work. You just name your Silicon Valley company. Because that's like coming out of the closet. And what are we worried about? Our golden frankincense and myrrh. But there's actually a much deeper problem. The reason our neighbors, our friends, they just think we're dumb for giving our treasure, our golden frankincense and myrrh, and even our time and energy for worship, is because there's a sin underneath the greed and the money and all that other stuff. The sin underneath that is a much worse sin. It is a sin of pride. I don't need that stuff. I don't think I really need Jesus. Even the Christians are kind of that way. You're like, yeah, it's just church. But my kid, man, I got to make sure my kid gets this. And when we operate like that, we're operating in pride. We think we know what's best for me. And that's where we're going to spend our time. That's where we're going to sacrifice our energy. But the Bible says that God was foolish. His foolishness is wiser than our wisdom. And his weakness is stronger than whatever thing we think makes us strong. And nowhere was God weaker than when he was a little baby. You ever hold a little baby's hand? I love looking at the little kid's hands. It's so beautiful and so perfect and so tiny and so vulnerable. Almighty God made himself so weak and so vulnerable for our salvation. He said, will you come and worship me? I am not only almighty, I will make myself ever so weak for you. And then, if you thought that wasn't weak enough, he was born so he could die and to be humiliated, to be crucified and rejected. He made himself utterly low, utterly poor. He made himself look like the refuse, the stupidity of the world. And he did that so that all of us who think we're so strong and we think we're so smart, he could say, you think you're so smart, you think you're so wise, what you really need is my weakness. You need to find out that you're weak. You need to allow yourself to be weak and come to my weakness. You need to allow yourself to think, maybe I'm not so smart. Maybe I need some of God's foolishness. And if you're hurting, and if you already kind of know, maybe gold, frankincense, and myrrh is not enough, then why don't you go to the God who made himself weak, who made himself foolish? And there, when you're doing that, your pride will melt away. If there's a religion out there, and that religion cannot heal people of their pride, let me give you a hint. It's fake. It's fake. You know how I know that atheism is garbage? All the people who know there's no God, they're prideful. It's a great way, it's a great smell test that I do when I walk through the world. Oh, I know what's good for me. Some people are nice about it. Some people are not so nice about it. They don't have the wisdom of Christmas. But if you want the wisdom of the Magi, if you want real wisdom, you must allow the weakness of God to wash away your pride and run to him in worship. And know that he is your life. It's not just some idea. Well, he's my life. Really, the weak God, he's my life. Let's pray.